A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete.
Lose! I don't lose! I win! I win! I'm a lawyer! That's my job! That's what I do!
Hey, everybody. This is Alex Barnett. I'm joined by Julie Katakis. Hello, Julie.
Hello.
And we're bringing you episode 41 of the Comedians at Law podcast. We've been just kicking behind and taking names, as they say. Our podcast is growing by leaps and bounds in terms of followers and downloads, and we really appreciate it. And this week, we've got some great news stories for you, some interesting news stories, a great interview with a woman who's really big into flash mobs. And then at the end of the program, we'll turn, of course, to Good Cop, Bad Cop as we check out our Twitter feed to see how you guys are engaging with us. But before we turn to all that, a couple of quick announcements. Julie, as you know, we've got a big show coming up on August 10th at Poconuts Comedy Club out in the Poconos. Are you excited for that? Really? All right, Julie. That was really
so excited.
Yeah. I think it would be good if you didn't have a 10-second delay after I asked you a question, because we're not on television. We're on radio here, and people can't hear the silence. Julie using silence to create tension, which is a comedian's old trick. But we've got this show August 10th at Poconuts at 9 p.m. For tickets or information, you can go to the website there, or you can hit us up for information, info@comediansatlaw.com. The other things we've got coming up, well, a couple of just shout-outs we want to make. We've passed 3,000 fans on Facebook. Yay! Which means we're just, you know, now 997,000 fans away from our target goal of 1 million fans. And we're at just over 1,000 Twitter followers. So again, we're 999,000 away from our target on Twitter. So, Julie, we're just really mopping up in terms of social media.
It's pretty impressive.
Julie's always really Johnny on the spot. What's that?
I'm not purposely delaying. I don't know. Am I on a delay?
Are you just a laconic personality? I mean, you know, this is supposed to be an entertaining broadcast. We're not, you know, it's not a narcoleptics convention.
Well, I tend to nap and do social media simultaneously. I'm a busy person. So I
see. Well, there you have it. For any of you out there who are trying to fall asleep, Julie is your answer. She will put you to sleep just by listening to her on the radio. It's more soothing than like a Tony Bennett concert.
Yeah. On dates, I'm really good at the napping section of the date.
Excellent. All right. Well, so those are the big announcements. We're really mopping up on social media. We've got a big show coming up. And Julie's performing all over New York City. You can hit her up on our website. Correct, Julie?
Yep.
All right, which is, what's the address quickly?
Oh, my website?
Or yes.
Okay. No, don't do that. Go to my Twitter account. That's better.
Well, you want to tell people or they have to guess?
Fine. I have to do all the work. It's Julie K Comedy. There you have it.
All right, there you go. If you can tweet to Julie without falling asleep first, she'll actually respond back to you. And if you want to find out where I'm at, you can hit me up on my website, www.alexbarnettcomic.com. By the time this show airs, I will have done a big show at Gotham Comedy Club this Saturday, June 29th, but I've got a couple other big shows coming up, so you can definitely hit me up, and I will give you my schedule in July and August, which includes a trip down to North Carolina. But in the meantime, let's get to the news.
Since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine the news content?
Julie, our first story this week, it's the one that's been, well, let's just say as a caveat, there's been a lot of coverage of the Supreme Court's rulings in the Defense of Marriage Act case, the affirmative action case, Fisher versus University of Texas, the voting rights cases. You know, I guess from my perspective, the Supreme Court got it right on gay marriage and kind of punted on affirmative action and got it wrong on voting rights. That's my personal opinion, and people are free to disagree with me if they care to be wrong. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about this week another major news story, legal news story, and that is, of course, the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman trial that is still ongoing, even as we tape this podcast. Have you? Mm-hmm. I know you've been following this with some interest.
Yeah, I have actually. It's interesting and a little entertaining to watch.
Well, what about it do you find entertaining?
I find it really entertaining how a lot of the witnesses are sort of skirting around words that they fear will sound racist.
I see. So, for the 3-4 people in America who don't know what this trial is about, let's just quickly set it up. Last year, a young teenager, Trayvon Martin, who was African American, went out to the store to buy some Skittles and some soda, and was wearing a hoodie sweatshirt. On the way back, he encountered a neighborhood watch guard, George Zimmerman. There is some dispute as to what was said between the two of them, but the end result was that Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin to death and has now claimed justification under Florida's Stand Your Ground law, and he's now being tried for murder. So there's the background. Now, of course, the backdrop of all this is race relations in American racism, and you are noticing that witnesses are trying to tippy-toe around being racist in public. Is that what you're sort of saying?
Yeah, that is what I'm saying. It's sad, but I mean it's a little funny to listen to certain witnesses just, you know, making sure to choose the right words. And then when the friend of Trayvon who was on the phone with him she was very uncomfortable when she used the word cracker.
Really? Now
she was a little uncomfortable.
She was getting a lot of bad press and negative press in the media the day after her first day of testimony because she was not particularly literate or eloquent and seemed to present herself poorly just in terms of physical presentation. And I think she was getting a lot of flack for that. What do you think about that?
I think she was, but then I do think it turned around a bit because I think it was even I don't know. A lot of people were saying how she does. She was much calmer and sort of standing up for herself a lot more, not getting bullied I don't think being disrespectful by any means. So, whatever they said the first day, I think she sort of redeemed herself.
Yeah. Now, did it strike you as odd, for example, like in the pictures of Trayvon Martin that were shown at the time he was killed, he seemed like a very tall, slender young man, good looking young guy. And, the woman, this woman, his friend, looks, I mean, saying heavy set is, I think, being generous. She looks like a big load.
Strapping,
yes. Strapping is another generous way of...
Oh.
So did it strike you as odd that... And also, like, they're saying that they're friends, which is, I don't know, is that paving over a relationship they may have had? Do you know?
I don't know, maybe he just... If I could choose my friends, I would love to have a strapping member in my friend unit. I mean, I think she's a smart choice.
You really? In what sense?
I could walk around with her. No one's messing with me.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. Now, personally, what's your view of the world? Do you think Zimmerman is guilty here? That's what people want to know.
I mean, it's, you know... I at the moment, yes, but I do have to say social media makes the news in particular makes things such a story that it's hard to view anything with an unbiased, you know, just being unbiased. So, the way that it sounds, I think he instigated it, and I'm gonna put a little opinion on guns here. I don't think he would have instigated anything if he didn't have a gun.
Right. So that's
what, and this never would have happened.
That's what the crux of this all is. I mean, it comes back to guns. And listen, people are free to interpret the Constitution any which way they want. Certainly, the Supreme Court feels every license to just interpret the Constitution right into a paper bag. I mean, Justice Scalia's views of the Constitution are, quite frankly, in my opinion, cockamamie, I think is one word. Meshuggah would be a word that people like me would use. And by people like me, I mean Jewish people who speak some amount of Yiddish. I mean, I think his group and their interpretation of the Second Amendment is completely mishigas. And I it's unbelievable. But you're right. I think there's no way Zimmerman gets into it with somebody unless he knows he's packing heat. And the regrettable part of all this is that he took someone's life. And now he's trying to hide behind some cockamamie stand-your-ground law, which is ridiculous in the second instance.
Yeah.
That's my view.
Yeah, so I don't like, you know, it's about who threw the first punch. But, I mean, does it have to be the first? You know, it's like, I believe that's how it really starts. I mean, that's what they're trying to figure out. But undoubtedly, Zimmerman started it. Maybe he didn't throw the first punch, but he certainly started it. So, I don't know. Right. I mean, in the dark, I think anyone would be frightened of someone just... And he was called creepy guy following him. So, I don't know. I just...
Yeah. Well, let's go back to your original point, though, which was that people are tippy-toeing around racism on the stand so they won't sound like racist. What do you think Paula Deen would do if she were a witness in this case? You know, would she be dropping N-word bombs all over the place? Or talking about how the Jewish media has cornered her into losing her job? I mean, I don't know.
I think she would first suggest that they do a rendition for a plantation wedding. That was cute. I think a plantation wedding is really fun. But I think she would cry if it affected her. But anything, I really don't. I think she'd be indifferent otherwise in this whole story.
You think she might get on the stand and sing or hum or whistle a couple of bars of Dixieland?
I really want to feel bad for her, but I just can't. I can't. I really can't.
It's something else. All right. Well, let's move on. But quickly, let's get a prediction out of you. What do you think is going to happen with Zimmerman in this thing? Is he going down to Chinatown or is he going to get free?
I think so.
Wait a second. Is he going to be guilty of murder or manslaughter or something less?
I don't think anything less than manslaughter, personally. I think that's probably what they'll go with, because it is – the witness testimony is very it's contradictory. I mean, completely. So, you know, when they follow whatever rules they're given and making their decision, the jury's probably – I'd say I'm going with manslaughter. That's right, my prediction.
So you say manslaughter. What's your sentence? What sentence is he going to get?
I'm going to give him 10.
10 years. That's the. You think he's not going to get 7 to 10? He's going to get 10.
Well, me. Okay, I'm not sure, but I'm going to go with around the 10 region.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Let's move on to our second story. This is one that I've sort of fascinated by, and this involves the world of NFL football and Aaron Hernandez, the tight end with the New England Patriots, or the former tight end. Have you been following this? I know you're a big football fan.
Yeah, I've been following this very closely.
All right. Well, just in case some of the other listeners have not been following this closely, Aaron Hernandez was a tight end who was born and raised in New England, went to the University of Miami, played football. He was a superstar. He was drafted by the Patriots, superstar in the pros, just signed an enormous contract for like a gazillion dollars, and now he's been arrested by the police. Wanted for the murders of potentially three people. One recently, a guy who was found shot in the head very close to Hernandez's home, and a double homicide that occurred last year. And the police believe there's some linkage that, in fact, the guy who was just shot might have been shot because of his knowledge about the double homicide last year. So that's the backdrop. What I find so fascinating is the following, that one of the ways the police have linked all the clues together is that Hernandez, if the police are believed, and Hernandez did it, rented a car. This is a guy who's a millionaire. Rented a car in New England where he's probably one of those six most visible known people in the world. Took the car to a gas station with a little food market. Bought blue cotton candy Bubblicious bubble gum. Went, killed the guy. Took the car back to the car rental place. Offered the desk clerk a piece of the blue bubble gum. And then later, after they found the body, when they were cleaning out the car, they found a piece of blue bubble gum underneath the seat next to a shell casing. Now, what I'm wondering is, why did Hernandez go to all that trouble? Why didn't he just buy a bag of breadcrumbs and drop them out as he was going all the way to the dead body and back just to save everybody a step or two? Are you with me?
I think he's adorable.
You think he's – I mean – this guy has to have an IQ of about a bag of rocks. I mean, what is – who buys blue bubble gum?
I'll tell you what the problem is. He's very good looking. All I notice when I'm watching the news is how very good looking he is.
Oh, my
goodness. I don't hear anything.
Well, thank God you don't work for the prosecution. I mean, oh, my goodness.
Be like, thank God I'm not on the jury. I would case D'Anthony him out of this mess.
Oh, my – you'd be like – yes, they have video of him shooting the guy in the head, but, Your Honor, he's so good looking, I can't vote to convict.
Is it not, you know, the standard is reasonable doubt, and I say he's not guilty by reason of being very good looking. That's what I would think.
God, Julie. So in other words, if this guy gets convicted, and why, because the jury's men who are straight and not gay, if this guy goes, so you're going to have a jailhouse romance with Aaron Hernandez? You're going to write letters to him?
Oh, definitely. But, you know, you made me think about something. Actually, maybe I wouldn't Casey Anthony him out of there. I might just pretend I was, because I would be sending him notes. And then get him in jail, because that's my perfect opportunity to pounce, start a jailhouse romance. Right, I'll know where he is. He's always gonna be there.
Yeah. Well, here's a question.
Going to want my attention. I just got myself a hot boyfriend.
Here's the question. All right, fine. If we're gonna go there, let's really go there. Okay. Who's better looking, Aaron Hernandez or Brad Pitt?
Aaron Hernandez. I do think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Aaron Hernandez better than Brad Pitt. Okay. Who's better looking, Aaron Hernandez or Paul Newman in his prime?
Aaron Hernandez.
Okay. Who's better looking? Aaron Hernandez or Justin Bieber?
Come on. Aaron Hernandez, for God's sake.
I'm trying to think who's big now. Who are the big hot celebs? Who's better looking, Aaron Hernandez or George Clooney?
Well, okay, that's a good one, but George Clooney's like a different good looking. I'm still going to go with Aaron Hernandez. He's got tattoos.
All right. So if you, on your bucket list of guys you want to cuddle with. Where is Aaron Hernandez rank? Is he number one? Or is he only in the top 10?
I would give him slots number 1, 2, and 3. And then from there,
all right, Aaron Hernandez. Aaron Hernandez did slots 1, 2, and 3 on the I Want to Cuddle With bucket list?
Yes.
Even if he's in jail?
Even if he's in jail.
Okay. And the tattoos don't bother you? Because, you know, he's covered in tattoos.
I'm okay with that right now. I'm going to go with it. All right. I'm okay with that.
Is there anybody alive now who rivals him in terms of adorability, from your perspective?
Adorability. I'm sure there's someone. I can't think of anyone famous at the moment, but I'm sure there's someone that's close to as good looking as him that hasn't killed people. So right. I would probably give let's do
the countdown ticker really fast. I'm going to spit out some names, and you say whether you would pick Aaron Hernandez as a romantic mate versus the other person. We'll do a quick bunch of names, and we'll move on to the next story. Okay, so Barack Obama versus Aaron Hernandez.
Aaron Hernandez.
Okay. Governor, what's his name? O'Malley from Maryland versus Aaron Hernandez.
Aaron Hernandez.
Chris Christie or Aaron Hernandez?
Ooh, Aaron Hernandez.
That's a trick question. All right. Tom Brady versus Aaron Hernandez.
Aaron Hernandez.
Wow. How about Rafael Nadal versus Aaron Hernandez?
Oh, Aaron Hernandez.
David Beckham versus Aaron Hernandez.
Aaron Hernandez. I'm really into him.
I see
Can
that.
You hear me, Aaron Hernandez?
All right. How about the late James Gandolfini versus Aaron Hernandez? What do you think?
Okay. Oh, I'm going to go with James Gandolfini, but more out of respect.
All right, that's fair. So let's end it there. Julie would sleep with a dead guy, but only slightly more than she would sleep with Aaron Hernandez, who's probably killed three people in the last year. All right, let's move on to our third news story. This one, Julie, I think you got to take the lead on, because this is right, because you're a big person on Twitter, and this comes out of the world of Twitter. So why don't you set it up for our listeners and tell us what's going on here?
Okay. Alec Baldwin, known as a very funny, he's a great comedic actor. He's been on SNL how many times and always blows it out of the park. He's so funny, but he is known to have somewhat of a temper, right? I mean, some years ago, they had a recording of him yelling at his daughter. Then he had a little teeny issue about playing Words with Friends on a flight. He wasn't supposed to be playing, but he insisted, got a little angry about it. And recently, he and his wife were at Gandolfini's funeral, and there were some tweets posted on his wife, I believe her name is Hilaria, on her Twitter account.
Is that from the Latin root word for hilarious?
I don't know. He should be angry about that, I think. But anyway, so apparently there were some tweets posted during the funeral, and some journalists went with it and, put up a story about his wife being insensitive and tweeting without checking with them first. So Alec Baldwin's immediate response and reaction was to tweet some really angry tweets. Expletives were mentioned. Even some ethnic slurs against Brits, possible homophobic remarks.
Well, hold on but a second, in general, British is not an ethnicity. I mean,
Well, it's not. But he was saying something about them being toxic Brits or something to that effect. So
they
could take offense.
They're all mean and snooty. They deserve
it. Hey!
You're not British.
No, but we take a lot of their shows and we get tons of ideas from them, so.
I must admit, I love Downton Abbey. But, all right, so the bottom line is Alec Baldwin got a little snooty and obnoxious on Twitter, and there was some blowback.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, you're a big Twitter person. What do you – is there a code of responsibility for people who tweet?
The way that I think Twitter should be used is not for your real I like it more as sort of for writing jokes, and sometimes those jokes will have maybe some pop culture references to it, but to actually put in, anger and yelling at someone, getting very, rude and yelling at people on Twitter, I think is just weird and immature. I wouldn't use it for that. I think that's just like on Facebook, you don't, put your I'm angry at my ex-boyfriend stuff. It's inappropriate.
I gotcha. Okay. All right. I mean, look, so what do you think that the punishment for Alec should be here?
Well, I think he does it for himself. The thing about Alec Baldwin is that the big story is no longer the tweets. He does this. He gets so angry that he becomes the big story. But no matter what he does, he's just so likable and funny, it doesn't stick to him. he'll still be that funny, successful guy on TV, which is interesting. I don't know if it's because he's a man or, you know, like Paula Deen, she surely didn't get
it. Oh, here's a good question. So who's cuter, Alec Baldwin or Aaron Hernandez?
Well, now a young Alec Baldwin, a current Alec Baldwin, Aaron Hernandez wins. A young Alec Baldwin, there's a little bit of something there. Plus, they're both angry and violent, so that's nice. They've got that going for us.
All right. I think here's the thing. You are, for the people who don't know Julie's role within Communities of Law very well, because maybe you're new to the podcast, Julie is basically the Twitter czar of the group, or the czarina, I should say, the czarina of Twitter for the group. So I think the bottom line here, the tweet for next week should be I think there's two things, two assignments. First of all, people should tweet at Julie at using the Comedians of Law Twitter handle. Hashtag CALPOD or CalPod, or just at Comedians at Law, and give Julie some thoughts on how Alec Baldwin should respond to being castigated on Twitter. But more importantly, Julie, I think the assignment for you is, I think Comedians at Law should reach out via Twitter to Alec Baldwin to show our support for him in his time of need.
He shut his account down.
Oh, so we can't do that.
After Carl's anger.
Well, for sure, I hope you will not Twitter at Aaron Hernandez, because the last thing I want to do is bail you out for being an accomplice after the fact.
So
please don't do that. All right. So we have to move to the interview of our show, but everybody hopefully enjoyed the news and found out a little bit something about Julie, which is that she really likes angry, violent men. So with that, we have to move on to the interview, which we cleverly call interview. And this week we have a very interesting lady, Ruth Carter, who is really big, as you'll find out, into flash mobbing.
Woo!
All right, folks, this is Alex Barnett, and I'm here today joined on the podcast with Ruth Carter of the Carter Law Firm in Phoenix, Arizona. We're really happy to have you here, Ruth. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be on the show.
Well, we'll fix that very shortly. Ruth is actually, we're very excited to have Ruth for all kinds of reasons. One is she was available, which always helps with our guests. Number two, she is a lawyer, which fits with our theme. And number three, she actually has a personality and has a sense of humor, which is rare in the legal field, but fantastic for this podcast. Ruth, why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is you do currently? Because I was looking at your bio, and rather than me characterize it, I'd rather have you describe what you do at your law firm, but also in your outside the law firm interests, because they're pretty exciting.
Okay. So I own Carter Law Firm in Phoenix, and I did that because I basically became unemployable during law school because of my blogging and flash mob work. So I opened a transactional law practice that focuses on business formation and contracts, intellectual property, social media law, and flash mob law.
All right, so let's just stop there. For anybody who's not familiar with it, who's listening to the podcast, who doesn't know what a flash mob is, a flash mob is, Ruth, what is a flash mob? Because I know, but I don't want to ruin it. I want you to tell the people.
A flash mob is an unexpected public performance designed to surprise and entertain an unsuspecting audience. So, you know, those are the people who you see videos of dancing in the street, or, you know, riding the subway without their pants on, or, you know, freezing like statues in unusual places.
Or the five or six people who come to the Comedians at Law shows from time to time. Yeah, I gotcha.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So now you said that this started for you back in law school. Is that what the genesis of your flash mob activity?
Yes, it is. I did my very first flash mob when I was a first year law student, and I fell in love with flash mobs.
Well,
and I co-founded an organization here in Phoenix called Improv AZ, and we kept doing flash mobs. We still do them. We love them. Right. And then about 6 months later, I got really into the legalities of it, and it's kind of become one of my passions, and also made me unemployable because I live in a very conservative part of the country where they like it when their attorneys keep their pants on in public.
Right. Well, I was going to say, like, to me, you know, as an uninitiated person in the world of flash mobbing, it sounds like a bunch of guys in trench coats opening up and exposing themselves to all women. But I take it it's not really that, although it is, because you just talked about people pulling their pants off. I mean, is the genesis of the flash mob people disrobing in public?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it depends on who you ask where flash mobs began. I think they really do have their roots back in, like, the 1970s when people were organizing happenings. I think it really did grow out of that.
Happenings. Okay, so basically what you – and I guess in this day and age, they're easier to coordinate or organize because with texting and Twittering, you can – tweet at people or text them and say, everybody get together at the town square at 9 p.m. to remove your shoes and throw them at the library or something like that. Or I, as I understand, you guys did a recreation of the dancing scene from Flashdance in public. Is that, or at a mall. Is that right?
Yes, that was our most recent event. We did a choreographed unexpected dance performance with everyone wearing matching t-shirts and leg warmers. And that was a lot of fun.
Let me ask you, now when you do a flash mob, do you get people other than in your flash mob group who join in, who see this and are moved and inspired to join in the flash mobbing?
Absolutely. We had, actually at the last one, the dance one, which was completely choreographed. We had some just random stranger just jump in the middle of our group and just start dancing with us, which was awesome. And then every year we organize the No Pants Light Rail Ride here in Phoenix, which is part of the global No Pants Subway Ride organized by Improv Everywhere out of New York. And we have, almost every year, when we do it, we'll be riding the light rail where from the waist up, we're totally normal, waist down, underwear and shoes. And we will encounter people who think that we're having a great time and want to join us and take their pants off and join in.
Have Senators McCain and Flake ever joined in a No Pants flash mob?
Not that I'm aware of. If they were there, they were incognito.
Really? Because Senator McCain is often considered a hero, and I think that if he were to take his pants off in public, his heroic status would only grow. Correct? Well, you know what? Don't answer.
Don't answer.
You have to work in the state in which he works, so we'll let you take a pass on that one. But now you talked about the legality of flash mobbing, and all kidding aside, it sounds like there might be some legalities like permitting people getting thrown in jail, whether you're mocking or I guess infringing on copyrights or through your parody work. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when it comes to flash mobs, if you're an organizer, you really have to take a step back and think of how many ways could this go wrong or how many things could we be accused of doing wrong? And there actually have been issues where people have gotten in trouble at flash mobs. Like if the event that you're planning, even though you think it's completely innocuous, but if it just happens to include some type of crime, like let's say you're organizing a pillow fight and you say everyone meet in this area and we're going to hit everyone, not just people holding pillows, you may have just committed conspiracy to commit assault because you're planning to hit unexpected, you know, unsuspecting people.
Right.
And because you're inviting people to join you, you just committed solicitation. in Phoenix, we did a fake protest back in the days when the Occupy movement was at its height, and we had the SB 1070 hoopla at full strength, and people at protests were getting pepper sprayed and arrested, and we were really concerned that people would see a demonstration and freak out. So I was there holding my awesome sign, which had nothing to do with anything political.
Right.
I had 8 Arizona laws in my back pocket just in case someone questioned, like, whether or not we were some kind of riot or disorderly conduct or...
Right. Let me interrupt you there. Do you go to these flash mobs sort of in the role of flash mobber or flash mob attorney?
Both.
Okay. Now, is there somebody else there who's equipped to handle the legal arguments or legal representation for the flash mob? For example, like, you'll hear of couples or families where maybe people will fly separately so in case there's an accident, you know, somebody will survive. So in case you get incarcerated, is there someone else who can come bail you out?
I'm sure I have someone, I could think of somebody who would bail me out. But no, I don't have a backup. If I'm taken out, then they're on their own.
Right.
I am only one of 2 flash mob attorneys in the country.
Wow, that's rarefied air, I would dare say. I mean, have you spoken at like ABA conventions about that?
I have, actually. I spoke at a tech show last year about flash mob law, which led to the ABA selecting me as one of their legal rebels last year.
Wow. So there you go, Comedians Law fans. We have a legal rebel on our show, which is a Comedians Law first. I wish we had some sound effects like a squeaking duck or a quacking duck to play right now, but we don't. We'll have to get to work on that. Let's turn our attention a little bit to something else, which is social media, because I know you're also very big in that, very a proponent of that, an avid legal practitioner in that field. First of all, what's your favorite social media platform?
I'd probably have to say Twitter. I love Twitter.
How many followers do you have?
Oh, God. My followership is not that impressive. I want to say 1,200.
Okay, because if you'd said 12, I would have been like, okay, you're not legitimate as a tweeter. But all right, 1,200 is a real number. All right, so, and how often a day do you tweet? Do you follow your own advice?
Almost every day. I can't guarantee every day, but yeah, basically every day.
And do you use other social media platforms like Facebook and Pinterest? Are you a Pinterester?
No, I do not need another internet addiction. So, and I really think that Pinterest has probably as much copyright infringement going on as YouTube. So I don't Pinterest, but I do Facebook, Google+, LinkedIn, and the law firm has its own YouTube channel.
I gotcha. See, I've been told, and I've observed this, I guess, my own self, that Pinterest, women like Pinterest, and that men seem to gravitate, to the extent that there's a gender bias in these social media platforms, men, among Google+ users, men are more dominant, and amongst Pinterest users, women are more dominant. Is that true?
That's what I've seen.
Okay, but yet you go the other way. You don't use Pinterest, you use Google+. Is that perhaps because flash mobbing is a more male-dominated sport and you have to keep up with the guys or something like that?
I don't know. Well, Pinterest is kind of like digital scrapbooking, so I don't do that. I'm not into that. I don't want to build boards. I don't want to see boards. I don't want to share them. So it just holds no interest for me, versus Google Plus is just another communications platform. And some people are really only active there. So if you want to talk to them, you know, that's where you got to go.
Have you gotten involved in representing people with respect to social media legal questions, either litigation or commercial issues?
I don't litigate anything. One of my goals as a lawyer is to never set foot in a courtroom.
How's that going so far?
So far, so good.
Well, you mean as a representative, as a prosecuted criminal defendant, you're fine with that, right? Like, in other words, if you get hauled into court because you got arrested at a flash mob, you're cool with that.
Oh, well, yeah, I can't. I don't control whether or not I get arrested.
All right, but you don't want to represent anybody. I got you. Okay, so
exactly.
With respect to your social media legal work, what kind of things are you doing?
I do a lot of consultations, and I do a ton of public speaking on social media law. So I recently looked at my calendar. I have done 18 speaking gigs so far this year, and almost all of them were about social media law, including at South by Southwest.
Do you get paid for those?
Sometimes.
Man, I got to get in on that. We, you know, I got to tell you, being a comedian is like being Rodney Dangerfield all the time. You'd get no respect. I have to beg people to pay me just to get up and perform, let alone speak. So now, do you have any intention or thought that down the road you'll phase a little bit out of the law and focus more on your improv work or your flash mobbing? Is that?
I would love to do that. If I could be a professional flash mobber, blogger, and book writer and just have the law firm be kind of like more of a side gig, I would love that.
Well, how do we make that happen for you? Can we get a Kickstarter going, like Ruth Carter flash mobber, and get a Kickstarter thing going?
Well, actually, Improv AZ gets people asking for us to help them with their flash mobs all the time. The issue is they don't want to pay us. And we go, no, if we're organizing our own, we'll do it for free. But if we're doing what you want to do and you want our expertise, you're paying for that. So.
Right. No, that's a fair point. I mean, that's how I feel. I mean, I get asked, as an aside, people will ask me or the group to perform at a, let's say, a fundraiser for something. And they'll say, can you perform for free? And then we'll say, well, wait a second. Are you paying the venue? Yes. Are you paying the caterer? Yes. Are you paying the DJ? Yes. Are you paying for the people who bring beverages? Yes, sure. but yet you should come and do the work that you want to do as your career for free. And, right. you know, it breaks my heart, but I usually have to say, look, I can't do it for free, just on general principle.
And to a degree, it's kind of offensive when people ask you to do what you do professionally for free. But I wonder, like, do they not place value in what we do when they ask for it for free?
Well, I think the answer is obviously yes. They don't value it because it looks too much like fun. So, you know, people either don't think fun is worth anything or they resent the fact that you're having fun and they're not. Well, we're running out of time, so I want to give you a couple of minutes to plug the stuff that you're working on currently that you'd like people to come check out or talk to you about. First of all, what's the website people should look at to see more about you?
So the law firm is carterlawaz.com. And if you want to watch me jump on my personal soapbox once a week, my personal blog is undeniableruth.com.
Okay. And do you have any upcoming flash mob activities that you'd like to, I guess, preview or advertise now?
We don't advertise in advance. So if you happen to catch us in action, you got lucky.
Okay. If somebody wants to get in on a flash mob in your neighborhood, how do they contact you to let you know that they're a fan of what you do and they want to join up?
Then the best way to do that is visit us at improvaz.com, and you can get on our email list, and you will be kept in the loop on all of our upcoming events if you want to participate.
Okay, and then because you do have your social media platforms, let's let you give a shout out to those. So tell us what your handle is on Twitter.
My Twitter handle is at RB Carter.
Okay, and LinkedIn, same thing, or Ruth Carter?
Oh, God. I may actually have Ruth Carter on LinkedIn. If you go to my blog on the law firm website, it has every post has links to all of my social media.
Okay.
But make it easy to find me.
That's great. Okay. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us.
Am I allowed to plug my books?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, absolutely. Tell us about your books.
I have two books coming out this year, courtesy of the ABA. The first one is called Flash Mob Law, The Legal Side of Public Pillow Fights, No Pants Rides, and Other Shenanigans, which
okay.
is coming out in August.
All right. How can people buy this? Is that on Amazon or something like that?
I believe it's going to first be just available through the ABA and then like a few weeks afterwards through Amazon. So,
okay. Very good.
And then by the end of this year, my next book should be out and also through the ABA. And that will be The Legal Side of Blogging for Lawyers.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Well, Ruth Carter, again, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate it. We're very excited to have you on, as I mentioned at the top of the interview. And if people want to hear more about Ruth, you can email us at info@comediansatlaw.com, and we'll give you Ruth's contact info that she mentioned in the podcast. And again, let's give one more thank you to Ruth. Thank you so very much, Ruth.
Thank you so much. I love this.
All right. Take it easy. Well, Julie, as you heard, that was a really interesting interview. Ruth is a very interesting lady. And now we have to turn to another favorite portion of the show for you, the good cop, bad cop. And this is where this is your time to shine, because you, again, are the Twitter czarina of Comedians at Law. And this is all about Twitter. This is engaging with the fans and seeing how they're engaging with us. So let's turn to our Twitter feed with Good Cop, Bad Cop.
Look, I'm really sorry about that. I just, I saw how aggressive you were being, and I thought, wow, I gotta go even bigger than that since we're doing Bad Cop, Bad Cop.
What? No, I said Good Cop, Bad Cop. I'm the bad cop, you're the good cop.
Okay, then there it is. That's it. I thought you said Bad Cop, Bad Cop.
All right, Julie, I'm looking at the Twitter feed, and I see we're getting a lot of engagement. Our Twitter feed is blowing up. You know, and in fact, I think someone retweeted a Facebook post on Twitter. How great is that? They're crossing social platforms to talk to us. What do you think?
It's all right. It's okay. I don't know.
That's it? Okay?
Listen, this is what I think. That's cute. That's really nice. That's fine. But, you know, if retweeting's nice, but I prefer more like some responses. I want to see people not just, I mean, the key word here is follow, right? Follow. Who follows? Stalkers follow. Stalkers don't just retweet. Stalkers don't just favorite things. They get in there and they're all on top of it. They're retweeting everything, favoriting everything. That's what I want to see.
So, I mean, but some people did actually respond, but that's not enough for you. You want people who are like actively cyber-stalking us via Twitter.
Yes, and checking everything that we do. I want them commenting and spreading things that we do. I will say Pink Collar Tours, they did some, I think they had an interaction with us. That was nice.
Nice.
There are some...
You know, first of all, the people who are members of that group, they're friends of ours. They're all comics. They're very big favoriters. You know, I don't think you can condone that behavior.
I can't. They should be out there. Every show that they have, they should be saying, follow Comedians at Law. Follow Comedians at Law, or we're not even going to do our show. That's a good follower.
Well, look, I see that back on June 24th, where is it? Ozel M., she retweeted our post, and I think that's great. I think she got right in there day of and retweeted it. How is that worthy of a T-shirt, huh?
Did she write a comment? Did she get us any followers?
Okay, no, but you know, look, she took her time to write it to retweet. That takes effort.
It's just a click. It's just a click.
All right. Are you pro T-shirt for Ozel, or are you going to deny this poor woman a quality Comedians of Law T-shirt?
I mean, whatever. She can have a T-shirt. It's just a piece of cotton. I really don't care. Okay.
All right. Well, fine. I vote for the T-shirt. But, all right, but fair enough. So okay. Let's give people a really good Twitter challenge for next week, and let's see if they can rise to the occasion. You know, I'm going to throw you a bone. What do you want them to tell you? What do you want them to say?
I want them to say that they know someone who looks just like Aaron Hernandez and that they have his phone number. That's what I want. Okay. If they can do that, they can get a T-shirt and they can get my, meet a smile. That's big. That's big.
That's true. That's true. Your face might crack in half. All right. So, all right. That's the Twitter challenge for next week, everybody. If you can find a guy who looks like Aaron Hernandez – but is actually a law-abiding citizen and is as single and not gay, Julie will smile and also send you a free Comedians at Law T-shirt.
There you go.
And you have to tweet it to us at CalPod, hashtag CALPOD, or at symbol Comedians at Law, and all by next week. If you can't do that, Julie will remain in her current loveless state of depression.
Crying
and herself to sleep every night with a cup of milk and a cat.
And a stuffed animal.
And a stuffed animal. And her daughter, who looks at her with pity and sadness. All right. Yes. Julie, I think that's all we got time for this week. I hope you enjoyed yourself. Certainly learned a lot about your proclivities.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, once again, folks, don't forget about August 10th. Put that on your calendar. We're going to be out at Poconos Comedy Club in the Poconos. You can hit us up for information about that. In the meantime, this has been episode 41 of the podcast. I'm Alex Barnett. And that was Julie Kakis being silent.
I fell asleep. Right. I'm sorry. And Julie Kakis.
She's the sleeping man's Ed McMahon here. Julie Kakis. And we will talk to you soon. Thanks.